We will be in John 9 today again. I was blind, but now I see. Couple things. Somebody had asked about Syria and the rebels, this rebel group. You know, what is the United States to do? It is a confusing situation because, like I said, on one hand you have Bashar Assad, who is taking after his dad and being a real tyrant. On the other hand, you think, okay, should we support the rebels? But yet, in a lot of ways, that could be worse than the first. The Syrian rebels announced that they did join forces with Al-Qaeda out of Iraq. So are we sure that we want to give the Syrian rebels money and armaments? Again, it's a confusing situation. Yes, sir?
Depends on if they'll stay bought.
That's right. If they'll stay, and you know our history is not good. I mean, we thought certainly the Muslim Brotherhood would be better than Mubarak. There's a lot of things going on, but one point that we're missing is that all of these groups, the Muslim Brotherhood, Al-Qaeda, Hamas, Hezbollah, Boko Haram, all of these groups, Islamic groups, they state and they see everything that they're doing as a religious war. That is their mindset. That's exactly what they state that they are doing. We're not willing to call it that. That's politically incorrect to call it a religious war. And so then your question is, then how do you fight something that you don't even know what to call it? That's one of those issues that we're going to have to confront sooner or later. So what's the best answer? I don't know. But you just think, 80,000 people dead through all of that carnage and everything that's going on. And then, did they cross the red line this week using a chemical weapon, and how are we responding to that? This week I was kind of like going, well, this is kind of like, mom, the little kid saying, he came over on my side of the line. Well, I told you if you're going to do that, what I would do. So if you do that again, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. So that seems like kind of a strange deal. Another thing, I don't know if y'all read parts of our president's talk to Planned Parenthood. That's sad. It really is. Our president gave a talk to Planned Parenthood, and he made a comment that was just belittling. I mean, that's all it was. He said, here's these people that want to drag you back into the 1950s. Meaning before Roe v. Wade and before, drag you back into the 1950s. I thought, you know what? No, Mr. President, I don't want to drag people back 60 years. I want to drag them back 3,500 years to that little commandment that says, thou shalt not kill, maybe. We need to go back a little further. So, I don't know. Pretty amazing things that we're seeing in our day and time. In John 9, we're going to be studying John 9 and all the interaction between all the different groups of people that are in this story. Jesus, his disciples, the man born blind, and then he became healed, his neighbors, the Pharisees, the parents, all of this interaction. It's pretty involved in what each group is doing in their own little act in the scene in Act 1. It's a one-act play. The time we talked about was probably after the Feast of Tabernacles, or Sukkot, which is in autumn, October for time frame. And we know that it was before Hanukkah in December time frame. And probably it was immediately after Sukkot, so late October, somewhere in there. But we know that it was on the Sabbath. And were there still a lot of people in Jerusalem from the Feast of Tabernacles? Probably were. There was a lot going on there. But the important thing is that it was taking place on the Sabbath, which will come up later. The location, again, was somewhere close to the temple grounds, because it said that Jesus in chapter 8 left the temple grounds, and as he went along, chapter 9, he found this man. And so we know that it was pretty close. And the important thing to remember about that is that there are other times throughout the Gospels where Jesus healed on the Sabbath. And we're going to talk about what that means. Healed on the Sabbath. And a couple of times it was in close proximity to the temple. Other times it was in synagogues up in the Galilee. So it appears that Jesus is taking the hypocrisy of the Pharisees directly into their own homes and presenting them with this dilemma. And it's a powerful one because of this is where the intersection of the letter of the law and the grace of Christ meet. And so he is presenting them with this challenge by doing that. And it wasn't just once. It was several times. And this is what made the Pharisees so angry with Jesus that they added to their list. You know, they accused him of blasphemy. They accused him of breaking the Sabbath. They accused him of these things. And so by the time he was arrested, they had a pretty good laundry list of their grievances against Jesus. So this is one of those times. And I showed you that the pool of Siloam, where he told the blind man to go and wash, was just outside the temple grounds. In the old city of David is what they would have called it. This is a kind of a map view of it. The temple is in the center, and then the Pool of Siloam is down at toward the bottom. So in close proximity to the temple grounds is where all of this is happening. All right, so then we go to verses 1 and 2, and this kind of kicks off this whole scenario here. Chapter 9, verse 1. As he went along, he saw a man blind from birth. His disciples asked him, "Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind?" Okay, so here's the dilemma. Here's this man that we know was born blind. Maybe the disciples had seen him often. It sounds like that he was a frequent visitor around the temple area begging, because his neighbors speak about that. Maybe the disciples knew this man also. And so this presented a great opportunity for this question. Because in the Jewish sense, and I know that we had talked about this last summer during our class called The Pain of Christianity. And that is this cause-effect between sin and illness. And we have to admit that sometimes we go through that same kind of trying to reason through these things in our minds. I'm sick, I'm in pain, or I'm suffering. What is the cause of that? Did I do something wrong to deserve it? And we're like Job, you know, all the way through Job. Job is crying out to God saying, "God, if you'll just show me what I did, then I can measure it with how much I'm suffering, and then I can kind of figure out if it's fair or not. And then maybe I can deal with it better." Well, you'll never get there. You'll never get there. Because as we know out of Job wasn't being punished for sin. So it was a real quandary for Job. You know, he just show me what I did. So that way I can reason through this. The question is oriented toward this blind man that was born blind, and they're saying, so now, wait a minute. You know, if cause-effect is in effect here, then if he's blind, then what happened to cause that blindness? And if he was born blind, then we got another question. Was it his parents that sinned, or did this man sin in the womb? I mean, because if he was born blind, then you got to backtrack from there. And all that means is that something happened in the womb. Okay? Well, here's an ailment, blindness. Who did what to deserve that? What sin was committed? And who committed it? That's what the disciples are trying to decide here. Okay? Now then, if you go along with the parents, okay, then what you're saying is that children are punished for their parents' behavior. Now they had really good, they had some really good support for this out of Scripture. Turn back to Deuteronomy. I just want to show you here. where this would have come from. Fifth book of the Bible, Deuteronomy 5. Now God is about to reiterate the Ten Commandments here. And in 5:8, he says, "You shall not make for yourself an idol in the form of anything in heaven above or on the earth beneath or in the waters below. You shall not bow down to them or worship them, for I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God, punishing the children for the sin of the fathers to the third and fourth generation of those who hate me." And so in one respect, the disciples had a great question of, is that what is happening? Is this man being punished for the sin of the generations before him? Is he the second, third, fourth generation of our father's sins? So see, they sort of have some support for that. Now then, do you kind of feel the hopelessness of you being convicted for your granddad's sin? I mean, I didn't have anything to do with that. I came along, 40 years later. What are you doing taking it out on me? Now then, the question comes up, can the consequences of sin last for multiple generations? Absolutely, it can. And so on one hand, yes, we can see evidence of the consequences being visited on multiple generations. You think, well, that's not fair? Well, no, but there are consequences that do last. They do endure. So that may be what he's talking about. I love, most people stop right there, but verse 10, people kind of ignore verse 10. But showing love to 1,000 generations of those who love me and keep my commandments. Where is God's emphasis? On love and keeping his commandments. He's saying, yes, the punishment for sin may be visited to 3 and 4 generations, but for those who love me, I'm going to visit for 1,000 generations. God's emphasis is on love and healing. That's where his emphasis is. He said, but as we know, biblical evidence shows that, yes, there were generations that suffered because of disobedience by their ancestors. That's all there is to it. And so the question was, is it possible that this man was born blind because of something that his parents did? I guess that's possible. But we'll see the answer in a little bit. Now then, let's look at this other one. The other possibility, was it the man who sinned? Okay? The man who sinned. And we're going to take a little side trip because it'll be fascinating to see. There's a bunch of different religions, cults, belief systems. Some of them started before Christ even and began to be developed along these same lines. If you can't sin in the womb, then where did that punishment come from? And the only answer has to be from a previous life, okay? So we got to look at that. Now, if the man sinned in the womb, then that is the ultimate outcome of what Christians believe is original sin. Think about it. If we are all born with original sin, then yes, it is possible that you will be punished for original sin even while in the womb. That makes you feel good, doesn't it? You mean even before I get here I'm in trouble? But that's the question they're asking. Did he do something in the womb to deserve this? And if we believe in original sin, then you have to admit that if everybody is born with original sin and there is punishment for sin, can it begin in the womb? Well, I guess it's possible. But again, Jesus is going to answer this. Like I say, there's not a whole lot of hopeful answers if you follow these tracks, and it's about to get less hopeful, I guarantee you. Okay, some of these beliefs, that began even before Jesus' time and then later developed into cults and different faiths, are that if you are in the womb and you are born with an ailment, therefore, if you're being punished for sin, then that sin must have occurred at some point in a previous life. The Jewish belief that was later developed after Christ into the Jewish mysticism called Kabbalah talks about the transmigration of souls. And they're not the only ones. There's a lot of different groups that believe in transmigration of the souls. Meaning, souls are eternal. Bodies are temporary. So souls, throughout time, dwell in different bodies throughout history for a period of time. When the body dies, the soul is released to go and dwell in another body for a period of time. So they teach that the soul is eternal, has always been here, will always be here, and will just inhabit bodies at different times during history. Transmigration of the souls. So that's picked up in many different ways throughout these other cults and groups. Okay, so as the bodies die, the soul passes into the next available body. Therefore, whatever sin you committed in a previous life, the punishment can be visited on you in this life. Okay, in Kabbalah, the Jewish mysticism, you know what the punishment for the most heinous of all sins is? That's if a man's soul inhabits a woman's body. I didn't make that up. So, right off the bat, it gets pretty hopeless, doesn't it? But that's the worst punishment that we can think of. Put a man's soul in a woman. So, you could really have some fun with that one. So. Take your, Black and Decker drill to, go lingerie shopping or something. I don't know. Gets really mixed up. All right, so you committed something in your previous life, and you'll be punished in the next. Okay, so you see pieces of this in Hinduism, which came along actually before Christ. And you've heard the term, well, that was really bad karma. Well, that is in essence what they're talking about, is that these souls that dwell in different bodies throughout history, you have bad karma that you're bringing from your previous life, and that's what makes your misery in this life. Okay? So that's Hinduism and bad karma. The next, and I want to save Scientology till last because it just blows you away. Reincarnation. As these souls take place in different bodies and everything, there's a technique that's used in psychiatry and New Age type stuff called past life regression. Okay? And usually what they do is hypnotize somebody. And what they will do is to start backtracking through your past lives until they find the injury that was done in some past life. And then they feel like that they can correct that and make you better in this life. I'm serious. I'm not making this up. And so that's called past life regression, where you regress back through your past lives until you find the point where you were injured and then begin to heal that, and therefore, you can heal your present life. There you go. Now see, what I want you to see, if you really dig into all of these different possibilities, and like I've said before, if we know what we believe and why we believe it, but do it in a reasoned approach, just like the Bereans, reason through the scriptures. And if you follow all these other different possibilities, all of a sudden Christianity looks incredibly reasonable and true. Because all this other stuff, you're just going, oh my gosh, how do you live your life that way? How do you live this life in our next life? Okay, so let's jump into Scientology, because this really gets even more bizarre. Now then, there's two groups out here, and I've taught several people, and there's a lot of confusion. There is the Church of Scientology, and then there is the Church of Christ Scientist, Christian Science. Those are two different organizations, okay? A lot of people get those mixed up. The Church of Christ Scientist, or Christian Science, was a church that was started by Mary Baker Eddy back in the 1830s or so. And she wrote her own book called Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures, and said that in that book it was revealed to her that this corrected all the errancies in the Bible, and that she had the final revelation, and blah, 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 on and on, like any group. Now then, Christian Science does believe in the eternity of the soul, okay? And there's a lot of things in Christian Science dealing with illness and disease, things like that. Their point is that spirit is always more powerful than matter, and therefore, if you're dealing with illness, that just if you have a more powerful spirit, then you can override whatever's happening in your body. It's a lot more detailed than that, but that's kind of the upper level deal. She states in there that Jesus Christ was not crucified to atone for everybody's sin. In fact, Jesus was not a whole man. He was an eternal spirit dwelling in a temporary man. So that Gnosticism of the spirit and the body, the separation of that, is in Christian Science. So there's a lot of things in Christian Science that are just not right, but they claim to be a Christian church. Okay, Scientology, on the other hand, who has the Church of Scientology, and even their logo has a cross in it, so it makes it real confusing. They never claim to be Christian. They are a off-the-wall group started by L. Ron Hubbard back in the 1950s or so, and has developed over the last few decades. Now then, what Scientology teaches about what we're talking about. If you have an illness or you got something wrong in your life, it is a result of something that happened in a previous life. Okay? If you had a sin or an injury that was committed against you in a previous life, that is carried on record with your spirit from life to life, and it's called an engram, E-N-G-R-A-M. Okay? Now then, this engram needs to be fixed, because until that engram is fixed, you're not going to get better. Okay? So in order to find out where that injury occurred, this gets really good, but I'm serious. You can go look it up for yourself. They hook you to what is called an e-meter, which is a little electronic device that you hold in your hands, or that hooks to your hands, and the operator begins to question you, you know, sort of like a lie detector. But they question you about previous injuries to you, and they go back and dig into all of this until they feel that they found this engram from a previous life. Now then, once you've latched onto that and you can begin to heal that, then your new life here and now will be better. They have what's called thetans. I'm serious. This is real. And they have what's called a body thetan, a physical thetan, okay? The spirit thetan is what is eternal and inhabits body thetans throughout history. These thetans bring those engrams with them into your current life, and that makes your life bad. And that's all the cause of it. So if you can clean up these engrams that dwell in these thetans, then your life will be okay. And you become what is called clear. Once you get rid of all of your old injuries and all your old past, the bad parts of your past, then you will become what is known in Scientology as clear. Then you become what is called an operating thetan. And there's several different levels that you can attain. I mean, I think Tom Cruise is OT 8 or 9, operating thetan 8 or 9. But the trick in Scientology is that every step that you take costs exponentially more to get there. I wonder why. Okay. What I want you to understand is there is a lot of stuff out there that when you look at what Christianity teaches, all this other junk, you're just going, I can't believe people fall for that. It is unbelievable. And it all comes from, why is this man blind? Who sinned? That's basically where it all begins and ends. That's where all these discussions come from. These are just different ways to answer that same question. If I'm sick, what did I do to deserve this? That's where it kind of all comes from. Now then, just for fun, they're out of all these different groups, this is just kind of a collection that I just found different parts. There are actually lists for whatever ailment that you have that tell you what sin in your past life created that ailment. You ready? Okay, so how many people in here have allergies? Oh, gee. We got a bunch of past life sinners, man. Well, if you have allergies in this life, now think this one through. It is because in some previous life you have been poisoned. Now, which automatically brings up the question, now wait a minute, it wasn't even my fault. Why am I being punished with allergies? So, all right. Now then, if you have allergies in this life, you're poisoned in a previous life. If you have epilepsy in this life, in a previous life, you poisoned someone. So you might want to check that out. How many have birthmarks? Anybody got a birthmark? That's where you were shot or wounded in a previous life. Anybody have trouble with anger or temper in here? Yes, and don't ever ask me that question again. In a previous life, you murdered somebody. Anybody have persistent headaches? You dishonored your parents in a previous life. Yep. Eye problems? Anybody have eye problems? This will be a good one. Lust. Can we see those hands again? And then the last one is blindness. Blindness was caused because you killed your mother in one of your previous lives. Now then, think this through. I mean, this is pretty fascinating. There's no indication of when this list, was developed. But I just thought, were the disciples privy to some kind of a list or something? And they saw this blindness and knew that, hey, we know what it says it is. Does that mean that, probably not. But I just thought, you read all this and you go, okay, this is incredible. So here we have a blind man. Must be sin somewhere. From our Pain of Christianity lesson last summer. Just want to be sure that everybody understands this. In the big picture of things, sin is at the foundation of all the world's disease, infirmity, and upheaval. Because God originally created a perfect world to be His creation throughout time. Man committing sin caused the dilapidation to begin of man and the world around them. Okay? Man rebelled, sinned, and the world began falling apart. So in essence, yes, sin really is at the foundation of everything that is wrong in the world today. However, as we're about to see, to assign a particular sin to be the cause of a particular ailment is not right. For the Westboro Baptist Church in Topeka, Kansas, to assign the cause of a death of an American soldier to homosexuality in the United States is wrong. Okay? can some tragedy or illness be traced to sin? Can some illness or tragedy? Yes. I mean, we know that anger, Jesus said, don't even get angry, you know. Murder comes out of anger, and so somebody dies. Yes, okay, so we see the consequences of that. Does alcoholism lead to poor health? Absolutely. If you do needle drugs, there's a high possibility that you're going to wind up with hepatitis, promiscuity, STDs. So sin does have consequences. Can you point at a particular ailment that's going on and say, that's what caused it? No, you cannot do that. Not in our limited capacity. Sometimes bronchitis and strep throat in the Texas Panhandle has a lot to do with allergies and up and down temperatures than sin. Okay? So it is because the world isn't working like God originally intended that we have any disease in the first place. But to assign a particular ailment that you're going through right now to figure out what sin it was that you committed is not correct, as we will see. So let's go on and for just a minute here. So his answer to all of this is, Jesus replied, neither this man nor his parents sinned. Neither one. But this happened so that the work of God might be displayed in his life. Okay, now here's what's incredible about this. Jesus answers them by saying, neither one sinned. This man was born blind, but it was not the cause of sin. Okay, now then ask the question, who is the only being in the universe that would have that knowledge? Then all the questions about, is Jesus really God? Yep. God and God alone knows the answer to that question. Anyone else has to operate on sheer conjecture. The disciples were trying to figure out who sinned. We might just as easily have guessed that sin didn't cause an ailment, but then it might have. I mean, it's a toss-up for you and I. We don't have complete knowledge. God alone does. So Jesus says neither one sinned. Neither one. So sin was not involved in this man's blindness for his life. Now then, we're going to get into it later. I've got some real interesting, you know, thoughts on how old this man was. I think he was quite young. We'll get into that after a while. But if he was quite young, this kid was brilliant, okay, as we'll go through that. So here is somebody, so let's say he's 20. Here's somebody that was born blind. He was blind for 20 years. It was not caused by sin. And yet God had prepared this for a particular point in time just so his glory might be displayed. Now, we don't even know if this kid, you know, what his attitude on spiritual matters were. You know, some of his answers to the Pharisees make me think that he was probably a religious young man. His parents went to synagogue, all of that. So maybe he was in tune with God. We're not sure, but I think he probably was. But you've got to ask the question. You know that Jesus and his disciples were standing here where this man is hearing this. And what, you know, what's going through his mind that I've been blind for 20 years just so God's glory can be displayed in me? Was that fair? See, the question comes up, and we touched on this last summer. Are we willing to suffer for decades just so God's glory can be displayed in us? What if that's what it's all about? that some people suffer an entire lifetime just for a specific moment in time where God's glory shines through. Am I willing to do that? Now then, here's the other thing. Again, this flies in the face of the prosperity, healthy, wealthy gospel that teaches that, you know, Jesus doesn't want you to be sick. Jesus wants you to be healthy. Jesus wants you to be wealthy. And if you just have the faith, then you will be cured of all. Well, here's a guy that was waiting around for 20 years just for a moment in time for God's glory to be displayed. I tell you, this is pretty amazing to me. In a sin-stained world, suffering and illness is a given. It's going to happen. Can our suffering and illness be used to glorify God, and are we willing to do that even if it takes decades? It's pretty tough. What if God is less concerned about our happiness and health, temporary, than he is our eternal holiness? In God's mind, this 70 years that's on earth, he loves you, he is concerned about you, he hurts with you, but he's looking at eternity, and he wants you holy for eternity. So what we go through here for a few years, you know what, may be a witness to what he does in our lives. Are we willing to do that? Or, you know, our first inclination is to fight it like crazy. It's not fair, just like Job. But are we willing to be his witness on earth? Now, then, the flip side of this, I just want to finish with, you know, especially with the Stephen ministers, they've been through this training. We have to be very careful in telling someone that is going through a crisis, you are sick or you had this tragedy because it was God's will. He's going to use you. Because at that moment in time, they're going to use somebody else. If God is doing this, I don't want to be a part of it. That's the danger that you get in. There are times whenever you're counseling people that maybe you can go to that point. But their hearts have to be ready for that. A lot of times when you're counseling somebody in tragedy and you say something like that, you just lost them. You got to be careful. Okay. All right. Let's stop there. Any questions or comments? And let's have a word of prayer. Almighty God, thank you so much. Your word is absolutely incredible for us to read 2,000 years later and see how pertinent it is today. With all that's going on in the world, the different faiths, the different beliefs, the different cults, we can see their roots. And how they've been answered throughout time boggles our mind when compared to your gift of your Son that tells us what our afterlife can be like, what our life on earth, when our eternal life begins, to our afterlife that is carried into eternity. When we accept the gift of your Son, we see those things that you have given us in your word, and we thank you for them. It sustains us. It gives us strength to carry on. God, we want to be your witnesses. We want to glorify you in every single thing that we do, even when it hurts. We thank you in Jesus' name. Amen.